I just don't get it.
Just wish someone could do the research on it. Can we figure this out?
Hey, y'all. I'm Jonathan Hill, and I'm hosting a new podcast at Vox called Explain It To Me. Here's how it works. You call our hotline with questions you can't quite answer on your own. We'll investigate and call you back to tell you what we found. We'll bring you the answers you need every Wednesday starting September 18th. So follow Explain It To Me, presented by Klaviyo.
Hello, I'm Esther Perel, psychotherapist and host of the podcast Where Should We Begin, which delves into the multiple layers of relationships, mostly romantic. But in this special series, I focus on our relationships with our colleagues, business partners, and managers. Listen in as I talk to coworkers facing their own challenges with one another and get the real work done. Tune into Housework, a special series from Where Should We Begin, sponsored by Klaviyo.
Welcome to Switched On Pop. I'm songwriter Charlie Harding.
And I'm engineer Brandon McFarlane.
Brandon, I'm so excited to have you on the show. You've brought me a story today.
I did. I've been keeping my pulse on hip-hop. It's the music that I love. I've been producing it for 20 years now.
Yeah.
And over this summer, I know you know, we've had like a major historic hip-hop moment in the form of a rap battle between two of rap's biggest stars, Kendrick Lamar and Drake.
Yeah, I feel like this was like the biggest rap battle since the 90s.
Definitely, you know, we can cite 50 Cent, Ja Rule, 50 Cent and a lot of people, but yeah, I think that this was a beef that was brewing for like 10 plus years, so it was a long-awaited for hip-hop fans like myself.
It got nasty.
That it did. I'm going to do a quick rundown of the play-by-play of this beef just to catch folks up to speed. The first song was First Person Shooter by Drake featuring J. Cole, in which J. Cole mentions a big three. We the big three like we started to leave,
but right now I feel like Muhammad Ali. The three remaining great rapper auteurs of the moment.
Yeah, that would be Kendrick, Drake, and J. Cole. To which Kendrick responds a few months later in a song on Future and Metro Boomin's album. The song is called Like That.
Yeah.
And on the song Like That, Kendrick says, "Motherfuck the big three, nigga, it's just big me." And so this is where it starts the whole beef off. Drake drops a song called Push Ups in response to Kendrick. Pip squeak pipe down, you ain't in no big three. Scissor got you wiped down, Travis got you wiped down, Savage got you wiped down. Then Kendrick makes Euphoria and says, "Nigga, y'all think of my life is rap? That's whole shit. I got a son to raise, but I can see you don't know nothing about that." All right, now the wife and kids are in the mix now, so gloves are off. Drake responds in a song called Family Matters. Yo, baby mama Cash was always screaming, save me. I heard that one of them little kids might be day free. Then, not even hours after Drake drops Family Matters, Kendrick drops Meet the Grams, in which he hurls scathing accusations of Drake being a pedophile and writes a letter to his mom. Your son's a sick man with sick thoughts. I think niggas like him should die. Him and Weinstein should get fucked up in a cell for the rest of their life. And Kendrick followed up again the next day with another song, the banger we all know and love, Not Like Us. Why you trolling like a bitch? Ain't you tired? Trying to strike a chord and it's probably
A minor. Yeah, it's like, I didn't know you could really, truly win a rap battle, but by all means, this is the biggest rap battle win of all time. Like,
this may be the clearest win. Like, most battles could be debatable.
Yeah.
Jay-Z and Nas, some people still think Jay-Z won. 50 Cent and Ja Rule is pretty one-sided. But this one is very clear across the board. And Kendrick, he doesn't stop there. On Juneteenth, he had the pop-out concert at the Kia Forum in Inglewood, California.
Yeah.
And just very recently, in September, he announced that he's going to be headlining the Super Bowl halftime show.
Okay, so, but this is back in the summer. Why are you bringing it up now?
So, on September 11th, and during the MTV Video Music Awards, Kendrick releases this untitled song on his Instagram. I think it's time to watch the party die.
street niggas and the corporate guys, the rappers that report the lies. I need their families mortified. We can do life without them. Get their bodies organized. Tell me if you oblige. No more.
I think Kendrick is saying here in this song, "Watch the Party Dies," that mainstream hip hop is one big party, and that party has invited the wrong element. He talks about corporate influences mixing with street culture and rappers that report lies, men hiding their insecurities behind money and power. He's saying that party needs to die.
This is a bold claim. How do you feel about Kendrick saying that we got to burn this whole house down?
Well, I want to be honest about two things. I'm 38 with two kids. I'm past my party days. And there's just not much on the hip hop charts that I can play in the minivan with my two girls, just to be honest. So that's number one. Number two, at the risk of sounding like an old head, I do feel like my generation had a wider range of hip-hop on the charts to choose from. And nowadays, corporate interests do influence what rises to the top. And at least it seems to me what rises to the top has already been done.
Okay, well, this is interesting because I feel like on the show we've talked about some of the recent misfortunes that hip-hop has found itself in. That on the Hot 100 for the last 5 years, there have been fewer hip-hop songs. Some of that might be tipping back this year because of this rap battle. But genres like country are gaining while hip-hop has been waning. Now, I do attribute some of that to the fact that, like, basically every genre has assimilated sounds from hip-hop into them. If you listen to any song, you hear 808 beats, and trap hats have sort of become a just commonplace in every kind of music.
Exactly.
Like that Glass Animal song from a couple of years ago, Heatwave.
Yes. Sometimes all I think about is you, late
nights in the middle of June. Yeah, by the time you go to the outro, you even get some auto-tune. it's got everything.
It's got everything. And you know what that made me think about was you even got new artists like Tommy Richmond distancing themselves from hip hop in order to present themselves as a serious artist or,
right,
you know, somebody who wants to make real music. And so what does that mean for hip hop then? Does it become like blues or jazz? A genre of music that gets incorporated into the new styles to stay alive, but isn't really thriving itself.
So we're in an existential crisis. Kendrick Lamar, reigned kingmaker, going to be playing the Super Bowl, says hip hop is dead. What does this mean for our show?
So Kendrick's not the only person to declare hip hop's death. In hip hop's 50-year history, there's been at least half a dozen times that someone's declared hip hop has dead. So here's what I want to do.
Okay.
I want to look at some of the big moments in hip hop history, some of the big moments in hip hop's supposed death.
Yeah.
And see if it teaches us anything about this moment in hip hop and see if hip hop can be reborn.
Ooh, okay. So where should we begin?
How about we rewind just 10 years?
Okay.
In the 2010s during the SoundCloud era.
Yeah.
Okay. So the SoundCloud era is referred to by some as the mumble rap era. That's kind of a derogatory term.
Yeah.
But for the sake of reference, we'll use mumble rap.
Okay.
And mumble rap is basically, this is maybe more inside baseball, but when you're recording a song in the studio, a good strategy to record a song is to think about the cadence and the rhythm before the lyrics come. This is a method that's used by artists in every genre.
We call it top lining, where you're just like saying a bunch of phonetics into the microphone. And you're like, it's almost scatting, but slightly elevated scatting.
Yes, slightly elevated, but the melody and the rhythms are coming first.
Yeah.
And then you look at that mumble and create the lyrics from there.
Right.
What rappers started to do on SoundCloud in the 2010s would have a rap style that was almost like unintelligible. It was had like a Southern accent, using Southern slang or using hip-hop vernacular that was fairly new. It was hard to understand.
Yeah, it was kind of like you just recorded the mumble track scatting that you were later going to punch in some, you know, more enunciated words, but instead you just got the mumbling.
I think a really good example to use here is the song Panda by Designer.
Johnny, Sonny Boy, Connie. May not the macho like Randy. The chopper go out for Grammy. Then nigga pull up your family. Hope your killers understand me.
It's funny. It's even like, I hope my killers understand me. And you like can hardly understand him over the brah.
Right.
Which, as I take it, is supposed to be the sound of a machine gun, but I think is just like absolutely hilarious. All of the brrrrs.
I mean, I was still outside during this time. I loved that song. I couldn't tell you any of the lyrics to the song, but I also kind of didn't care. Like, it was like a cool song.
But you're saying there were critics. Like, people were not in on this scene.
Oh, my God. I mean, he was kind of the martyr for that era because the song was so big.
Mm.
And rappers who would call themselves real lyricists took offense to Designer and the like.
The sort of style of just like making it up on the microphone, not really enunciating your words. But, you know, didn't like Jay-Z also just make up everything on the microphone, never wrote down his lyrics?
And they called him a genius. You know, mumble rap was criticized a lot for a lot of its cliches. One of those being the triplet flow. Everybody and their mama tried the triplet flow. A brief breakdown of what triplet flow is we're basically talking about triplet quarter notes, triplet eighth notes over a 4/4 rhythm. So,
right. So instead of being like one and two and three and four, and it's one and a two and a three and a four and a one triplet, two triplet, three triplet, four triplet.
Beautiful. The group that really brought this triplet flow to the forefront and I think perfected it is the Migos.
Of course.
We're going to look at Migos' Versace. Versace, Versace, I love it. Versace, the top on my Audi. My plug is Giancotti. He give me the dozen. I know
that they mighty. Yeah. That's the sound. I feel like at the time when it came out, it was very cool because it introduced just kind of this new rhythmic language into hip-hop flow. Of course, every rapper has used a triplet before. It's a very common rhythmic division. But it became so prominent in Migos that it sort of became like the default way of rapping, I feel like. And as you put it, it definitely became a cliche. Lots of people borrowed it.
Yeah. No, you're totally right. Estelle Caswell, a friend of the show, had a very thorough breakdown in the Earworm series about the triplets in rap. I think she said that some of the first rappers to do it were like Public Enemy.
Oh, huh.
I know. Yeah. So even though the triplet flow goes back as early as Public Enemy, Migos really made it mainstream.
Mm.
And by mainstream, I mean pop stars like Beyonce and Harold lyricists like Jay-Z use the triplet flow on the Carter's Ape Shit.
Give me my check. Put some respect on my check. Or pay me in equity. Pay me in equity. Watch me reverse out of dicks. He got a bad bitch.
One triplet, two triplet, three triplet, four triplet.
And in the same song, Jay-Z also uses the triplet flow. His was a little more rapid fire without breaks.
Yeah, so I feel like the Migos flow has got to be just your straight up nonstop. This is sort of like machine gun technique of triplets. Jay-Z being of another generation, like he won't even put up with keeping that rhythm. He's got to mix it up constantly because that's his style.
Yeah, definitely. And to your point, I do think it's the space of the triplets that makes it fun. I think if you're rhyming and you're going in different pockets, it can be fun, but it's less come sing along with me. You know what I'm saying? It's more like watch me do this fantastic thing.
Okay, so the Migos flow just pops up everywhere.
So you got that. You also got Ariana Grande on 34+35.
You might think I'm crazy, the way I've been craving. If I put it quite plainly, just give me them babies. So what you doing tonight? Better stay doing you right. Watching movies, but we ain't seen a thing tonight.
Da, 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 da. Right.
That's all Migos right there. Yeah.
Right. So she does both sides of it. She does the triplet where she does the da 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 da, but then she drops the middle rhythm in the triplet and just gives us the sort of swung da 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 da.
Yes. The space. The space is what makes it fun.
Mm.
Okay. So the next song I want to play as an example of the triplets, the last song I'm going to play.
Okay.
because there's tons of examples I could use.
Yeah.
Is Kendrick Lamar's All Right.
Wait, you're saying Kendrick Lamar, who's saying hip-hop should be dead in the time that hip-hop was last called dead, yes, was also borrowing a thing of the moment. Let's listen to All Right.
I can see the evil, I can tell it, I know it's illegal, I don't think about it, I deposit every other zero, thinking of my partner, put the candy, painting on a Rico, digging in my pocket, in a profit, big enough to feed you, every day my logic, get another dollar just to keep you in the presence of your Chico, ah!
Kind of like Jay again, though. He's mixing things up, and what he does when he's using triplets is like he's constantly moving the stressed beat. It's not always on the downbeat. The stress is constantly moving. So it's like,
yeah, yeah. Where he's placing the rhyme,
yeah,
is like on the, in the
syncopated place that you don't expect it to happen. It's very cool.
Yeah, very nice.
But you're establishing that basically like mumble rap and the Migos flow that comes about, like critics were not unified in their fandom and said that this thing had to die, and yet
it persisted, and we're going to see that as a theme.
Yeah.
And by persisted, I mean some of the artists that came out of this era are Lil Uzi Vert, Juice WRLD, Future, Post Malone, Lil Yachty, the list goes on, that came from that culture.
Right.
And these are the next generation of artists that kids are looking at, but the music didn't die.
Yeah. Okay. So mumble rap didn't kill hip hop. In fact, in many ways, leading up till 2018, hip hop was at its height, commercially anyway.
Yeah. So hip hop didn't die in the 2010s.
No.
And it also didn't die in the 2000s, even though Jay-Z, hip hop then reigning king,
yeah,
announced hip hop's death with the death of Auto-Tune.
This is anti-auto-tune, death of the ringtone. This ain't for iTunes, this ain't for sing-alongs.
This is anti-auto-tune, death of the ringtone. This ain't for iTunes. You know, you got to be careful about putting technology in your song. It can date it real
so
bad.
Dated. Ringtones, that brought me back. Did you have any ringtones, Charlie?
Ooh, you know, I was always just too embarrassed by people whose ringtone went off in public. You know, you're like at a theater and then it's like, dun 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 dun, and you're like, I know it's, yeah, your mom calling, like, yeah, and you should probably change your ringtone about that, like, she's not happy.
Right. I just remember not being able to get my mother's credit card to actually like pay for a ringtone, so never had ringtones, but I do remember the era. So this was a real line in the sand between real rappers, quote unquote, and rappers who use auto-tune. And what auto-tune is basically is pitch correction software. You sing into it and you can set it to a key and it'll rapidly move your voice, your singing voice, into that key.
And I think most of us know the auto-tune sound. It's worth pointing out that some kind of vocal tuning is done on the vast majority of sung vocals on the radio. Like, vast majority, 99%.
Yeah.
Maybe some really raw rock songs or someone like Jay who's trying to rap with a very naturalistic style, they may not use it, but it's even used just for like minor corrections. Yeah. Like you would touch up a photo in Photoshop because there was like a fly on the lens or something.
Yes, you're exactly right. It just gets the voice to the note quicker. And again, you made a great point of when people rap and use auto-tune for their rapping voice, it's because it gives it a certain polish that our ears are now trained to hear because it's been on every record since this time.
Obviously, we hear it first on Cher's Believe.
I need time to move on. I need
in the 2000s, it becomes the T-Pain effect, yep, who really sort of masters singing with auto-tune put to its most extreme, and it does this very robotic digital artifacting sound. And I feel like auto-tune obviously was incredibly derided at the time for, you know, being unnatural. In some ways, there's some actually parallels between mumble rap and auto-tune, where there's this sort of dialogue about intelligibility, about skill and talent. If you use auto-tune, are you skill and talented? Is sort of the question of the moment. And yet it also gives all kinds of rappers, like Jay-Z could use it because you can hear him at the beginning of Death of Auto-Tune and singing way out of tune. He's not a singer, and auto-tune does give people who are not singers the capacity to, you know, hum a melody to the degree that even Charlie XCX says publicly now that she can't really sing without auto-tune. She needs it. It's part of her sound.
Yeah, exactly. I think a big example of this is Lil Wayne's Lollipop. Now, Lil Wayne's Lollipop, to me, it's a phenomenon because he's not singing well, but it's the effect, I guess, that's attractive about the song. Let's just play it. You can even hear it warbling around because it's trying to find what note Lil Wayne is singing.
Man, I'm realizing now, sorry, this is a total sidebar, but I feel like Lil Wayne's Lollipop may be the foundational text for country music's adoption of hip hop sounds, because Lil Wayne's got so much twang, right? He says her, and you see immediately how this could translate into a Nashville style song.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, it's New Orleans. We're talking about the South here.
Yeah.
And yeah, that Southern drawl is all over that record.
And as is the auto-tune, which is the object of great derision of the moment.
Yes. And I think one significant thing about auto-tune in the 2000s is that we're in an era of rap music where we're looking at like the first like rap superstars. You know, we got 50 Cent, Jay-Z, and Kanye West. And Kanye made a big pivot from like College Dropout and Late Registration. These albums had sample hip-hop beats and feature rappers like Nas and The Game and Talib Kweli.
Really all in the style and tutelage and mentorship of Jay-Z.
Yes.
Who he had produced for.
So after two wildly successful albums from Kanye West, he makes a big pivot and decides his next album is going to be all singing in auto-tune.
In the night I hear him talk, the coldest story ever told. Somewhere far along this road he lost his soul to a woman so heartless.
Oh man, I don't want to be a Kanye apologist in any kind of way, but this really strange thing is happening to me at this moment, Brandon, which is that when I first heard this record, I didn't get it. I was on Jay-Z's side of just like, nope, auto-tune's overused. It's not skillful. It's annoying. And now I'm hearing this record, I'm like, dang, that's a great record.
After a while, me and everyone else around the world had to bow down to this new sound, you know?
Mm.
And yeah, those two artists, specifically Lil Wayne and Kanye West, I think birthed the new era of rappers that if they wanted to, they could sing their own hooks or they could sing in the middle of their verses. I think Drake is a great example of that.
What am I doing? Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm doing me.
You certainly don't get Travis Scott without this style.
Mama Sita, Sita, Sita.
Exactly.
Some of the biggest hip-hop stars in the contemporary moment.
Yeah. Lil Yachty.
Right.
And just an aside, have you ever heard Lil Yachty's Poland?
Of course I've heard Poland.
Okay. I still don't know how he does it. This particular vibrato of it. It's amazing.
I took the walk to Poland. I took the walk.
That is cool. I've never thought about that. I've always just thought of that as auto-tune, but auto-tune does the opposite. Auto-tune
flattens it,
hard quantizes your pitch to one sound, and instead, but there is a vibrato feature in auto-tune.
Yeah, I haven't used it, but I assume
nobody uses that feature. That's what he's using. He's using the vibrato feature to give you that wobble.
Yeah. It's different. It's different. It's kind of sick.
And that is part of what is cool about auto-tune is like, despite being a sound that you think homogenizes everybody, there are people who have sort of found their own voice within this tool. Like, Lil Yachty doesn't sound like Kanye. Charlie XCX certainly doesn't. They all have their own approach to using this tool.
So despite Jay-Z's attempts in the 2000s, auto-tune persists. So let's go back even further to the 1990s and the war against explicit content, against rap music with violent lyrics, and all this in the 90s was a really big issue. And I found this out in my research that the first record, the first one that we know, the rap record that used curse words, was Too Short in 1985. He had a tape called Raw, Uncut, and X-Rated.
Oakland, California is the city, it's next. Pimps, pussies, players, and vets. Loud mouth bitches who talk too much. Dick teasing bitches who never fuck. Sucker ass nigga, fake ass girl.
Raw, Uncut, and X-Rated. Yep.
It was reported that this album contained 265 cuss words. and the word bitch was used 128 times.
Oh, boy.
And to even report that is such a 90s thing, right? Like, at this point now, no one's really counting the B words. But the 90s was a time in rap where rap started to become more regional. You started to hear voices from Los Angeles and the southern states. So artists like Ice-T and N.W.A. and the Ghetto Boys and 2 Live Crew in Florida. These artists emerged in the 90s with their own brand of rap that was really more oriented in a conversation with the cultures that they were living in.
And often with a lot of cursing set against the backdrop of, like, Tipper Gore and all of the parents trying to add parental advisory warning labels to CDs.
That's right. You got Tipper Gore, the Parents Music Resource Center, the ones that invented the parental advisory sticker. Yet it's kind of hard to even fathom now how upset parents and senators and activists were about lyrics.
It's not good. It's not good for America. It's not good for other countries. It's not good for our children. It's not good for our future.
Some of these artists are engaged in cultural strip mining. They are selling explicit sex and violence to younger and younger kids.
I am here to put the nation on notice that violence perpetuated against women through the music industry in the forms of gangster rap and misogynist lyrics will not be tolerated any longer.
Listening to these critics now is so funny to me because I remember that as a kid growing up, the parental advisory warning labels that were created as a sort of backlash against, vulgar, quote unquote, music ended up being the symbol of what actually you should buy. If it had a parental advisory sticker, you're like, that's dangerous. That's good stuff.
Yeah, it's so true. I think that for a lot of kids who this music was not reflecting, there was an appeal to the danger without actually having to be in that danger.
Mm.
And labels found out that this was a big seller. And so, Right. Like with all trends, everybody hopped on the bandwagon. Artists that didn't start off with a gangster persona develop a gangster persona because that is what would make them money.
Yeah. I feel like the gangster rap moment also is when hip hop proves itself to be massively commercially viable. And it happens against this really dark backdrop, though, of the hip-hop wars, East Coast, West Coast, and the killing of Tupac and Biggie. And everything sort of boils over to the point where there's a meaningful sort of even cultural backlash in the development of things like conscious hip-hop, trying to find a space for how do we keep the culture going but lose the danger because it has resulted in, you know, some real tragedy. Nonetheless, like, even going into the late 90s, you don't get the, you know, huge hits coming out of Dr. Dre and Eminem without the vulgarity and the sort of danger that's established with these gangster rappers of the late 80s into the early 90s. And I know, kind of to your point, I feel like despite its critics, vulgarity, danger, lack of respectability is kind of what makes hip hop so attractive to young audiences in this moment.
Yeah. And I think the people that had a problem with it, like the generations of one step above these rappers, they had a problem with the lyrics, but I think they had to come to grips with the fact that these lyrics were reflecting a very real thing that was happening in America. Like, before we address the lyrics, we have to address the problems that create the art, right? Like,
sure.
The art is always imitating life.
Right. the toxic masculinity which exists within these lyrics. Like there are all kinds of, you know, very valid criticisms as, you know, what are we representing? Is this how we best want to articulate our romantic relationships?
Or the violence.
Right.
In an album from the Ghetto Boys, you know, they'll talk about, damn, it feels good to be a gangster. Shit.
Real gangster ass niggas don't talk much. All you hear is the black from the gun blast. And real gangster ass niggas don't run for shit. It's real gangster ass niggas can't run fast.
But then, like, also my mind is playing tricks on me.
Some might say take a chill, B, but fuck that shit. There's a nigga trying to kill me. I'm staring at the woman on the corner. It's fucked up when your mind's playing tricks on you.
And it's like, that song to me is about PTSD. Like, it's very clear that the character in the song is afraid for his life based on the surroundings. And so I think in this era, especially the early 90s, everybody got to get a view of what it was like to live in these impoverished neighborhoods all across America.
So I feel like you're showing me this trend throughout this episode where it's like every single time hip hop is supposedly on its deathbed, it's actually about to like get over a bigger hill, right? Kendrick is saying after this big rap battle, oh, party's got to be over. 2010s, mumble rap, oh, it's no good. 2000s, auto-tune, oh, it's the death of hip hop. The 90s, vulgarity, violence, hip hop can't sustain. And yet every moment that we go back, it just seems to get bigger and bigger and bigger after those criticisms are wagered.
That's the thing with hip hop. Every time someone says this trend will be the death of it, it manages to get over the hill.
Yeah.
Even since hip hop's inception, people said that rapping and graffiti and breakdancing was a fad and it wasn't going to last.
I mean, I get that. Like, people really thought that rapping was just like a musical technique that would be a fad that lasted a few years. Like, everybody got in on it after the Sugar Hill Gang. Like, The Clash had a rap song. Blondie had a rap song. The first number one to feature a rap was actually by Blondie, the song Rapture, which itself is just like a silly novelty song.
And you don't stop, sure shot. Go out to the parking lot and get in your car and drive real far and drive all night and then you see a light and comes right down and lands on the ground and out comes a man from Mars.
That should have killed the party. Like, you know, props to everybody who, you know, worked to build the culture back from the low point, which was Rapture.
Dude, that was intense. That was intense. I was like, where is this story going?
It goes to an alien from Mars who has a gun and he's going to shoot you dead. It's absolutely ridiculous. All right, you've taught us some really important stuff here, though. Like, I appreciate going back in time with you and just seeing, yeah, the constant survival of this genre.
Every time hip hop persists. I don't know if you know the children's story Room on the Broom.
No.
Okay, so it's a children's book I read my kids all the time. This witch is riding on a broom. She loses her hat and she finds a dog that finds the hat. The dog says, "Is there room on the broom for me?" She says, "Yes, come on the broom." Another animal says, "Is there room for me?" At the end of the book, all these animals come on the broom until the broom snaps. And so, yeah, I guess what we're getting at is that hip hop in all these iterations has added things onto itself for good and bad. And I guess we're trying to figure out if the broom has snapped yet.
It's been super rewarding to go back with you through all of these different shifts in hip hop. I feel like its capacity for constant evolution is part of what has kept the genre going for more than 5 decades.
Yeah. I agree. And let's say that if hip hop is dying and it needs a resuscitation, like, it's going to be the next generation that ensures its survival. It's not the big three. It's got to be something new.
What's it going to be?
I'm 38, so I'm well out of my depth here.
Yeah.
So I had to call reinforcements.
Yeah.
So I talked to our producer, Rihanna Cruz, about what artists we should expect to rise up and take the throne in 2024 and beyond.
Let's check that out right after the break.
Support for this show is brought to you by Nissan Kicks. It's never too late to try new things, and it's never too late to reinvent yourself. The all-new, reimagined Nissan Kicks is the city-sized crossover vehicle that's been completely revamped for urban adventure. From the design and styling to the performance, all the way to features like the Bose Personal Plus sound system, you can get closer to everything you love about city life in the all-new, reimagined Nissan Kicks. Learn more at www.nissanusa.com/2025-kicks. Available feature. Bose is a registered trademark of the Bose Corporation.
Are you looking to eat healthier, but you still find yourself occasionally rebounding with junk food and empty calories? You don't need to wait for the new year to start fresh. New year, new me? How about same year, new me? You just need a different approach. According to Noom, losing weight has less to do with discipline and more to do with psychology. Noom is the weight loss management program that focuses on the science behind food cravings and building sustainable eating habits. Noom wants to help you stay focused on what's important to you with their psychology and biology-based approach. Noom takes into account your unique biological factors, which also affect weight loss success. The program can also help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those specific cravings, and it can help you build new habits for a healthier lifestyle. And since everyone's journey is different, so are your daily lessons. They're personalized to help you reach your goal. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com.
Everything about music is secretly a story about technology. How we listen to it, from vinyl to iPods to Spotify. How we make it, from pianos to computer plugins to AI prompts. How we discover it, from music blogs to TikTok. All this month on The Vergecast, we're telling stories about those changes and how technological change changes not just the way we experience music, but the music itself. All that, all this month on The Vergecast, wherever you find podcasts.
Brandon and Rihanna here, Switched On Pop Style Gods. Rihanna, I have a big issue. I'm feeling kind of old. When it comes to like new rap music, I'm kind of lost.
Yeah.
Who's standing out? Who's different? Who's dope right now? I have no idea. But I trust your ears. I trust your analysis to tell me who are hip hop's biggest influencers in this generation.
I mean, I feel like you have the like elder statesman of the 2010s. So Kendrick, Drake, I'd even put like Travis Scott in that three. After that, the artists that are really influential presently in the 2020s are Playboi Carti, Lil Uzi Vert, Tyler the Creator.
Tyler.
Because I think all three of them are responsible for specific subgenres in like the underground hip hop that we see percolating.
Okay, so let's start with Playboi Carti, who I'm most confused about because I maybe have heard him on some features, but I've never really gotten into his music. So, like, what's a song that's representative of the style and how people are trying to emulate that?
Yeah, I mean, Playboi Carti's career is interesting because his first few records had really big hits on them that defined his artistry. Like, I'm thinking of, like, Magnolia.
In New York, I'm in Lil Rock. Hiding in my socks. Running from an op. And I shoot at op.
But I think, like, the record that really cemented his influence was Whole Lotta Red. So, like, on Whole Lotta Red, you see Playboi Carti kind of pilot this new style of hip-hop that has come to define, I think, like, the first half of the 2020s, which is this, like, rage-style music. So, like, on a song like Rockstar Made, which opens the album, you get, like, clipping 808s, you know what I mean? Like, it's like kind of shrill. I feel like maybe to somebody like you, it would be like, why do people listen to this?
That kind of distorted bass I was familiar with from SoundCloud. I was like, oh, these kids just like don't have the proper equipment, so it sounds like this. And then it became like an aesthetic, a style.
Right.
Which is kind of punk. Like, I like it.
Right, and that's, like, I think the appeal of this album is that to, like, hip-hop fans, younger hip-hop fans who are, like, maybe not as familiar with, like, classic punk styles or, like, even maybe even missed the boat on pop punk. Like, this to them is the punk version of hip hop, and I think that's why it appeals, because it doesn't sound clean. It sounds messy. It sounds like he just kind of got in the studio and like started tearing shit up. You know what I mean? Like, it don't make much sense, but I think that's why people really like it.
Let's hear Rockstar Made.
Rockstar Made. Rockstar Made. Rockstar Made.
What did he just say? I'm not really sure. I like it.
Yeah.
And I just really don't want to sound old. So I'm not even gonna continue that thread. Brandon, you just need to listen to it some more and you'll understand the words. You just gotta listen to it. Do you know the words? No.
But that's okay. I feel like I don't need to know the words. You know? Cause like I feel like maybe this is like part of the generational gap is that, like, when I listen to hip hop, right, I consider myself, I think, well versed in like classic hip hop, you know, like Illmatic, one of my favorite albums of all time.
Right.
But I think that newer hip hop is less concerned with lyrics and delivering bars as it is with developing a richer production and sound. You know, it's very production focused, and like, that's how you get into the whole mumble rap thing, where it's like, who really cares what these rappers are saying? Because it captures like capital V vibes.
The vibe.
You know what I mean? And like, that's what I think Playboi Carti does really well on Whole Lotta Red and his general output, is that like, he makes people care about the aesthetic a lot more than actually what he's saying. Because like, if you really look at what he's saying, it's like kind of nonsense.
Yeah.
You know?
And not every artist should have the responsibility of saying anything.
Right. Like, I don't want to listen to Playboi Carti and, like, hear him deliver bars. That's not what I come to him for. I come to him for this aesthetic, you know? Like, he's doing the whole vampire thing. He's doing the whole punk rage thing. And, like, that's what people really connect with, you know? Like, my brother's younger than me, right? Like, my brother just turned 21. And his favorite artist of all time is Playboi Carti. He is very into hip hop and he's like an extreme hip hop fan. He came with me to Rolling Loud, but like, he doesn't really connect with somebody like Post Malone or even artists older than that. You know what I mean? Like, it's like he doesn't really listen to Wu-Tang.
Future.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like, going all the way back to Wu-Tang, doesn't really care. Even Future doesn't really care.
Wow.
He's like really tapped into like Playboi Carti and all of the little spawns that have come off of Playboi Carti, because he is so great at harnessing that aesthetic that I think like Gen Z listeners connect with. Yes. They connect with vibes first and then whatever they're saying second when it comes to hip hop.
Nice. Or even third, right? Because it's like dope beat.
Right.
Vibing on it correctly.
Right.
And just for my own self, like, the definition of vibing is just like how you're interacting with the beat, how your energy is coming across, how you're representing yourself. Is it a good time? Because even here, I know it's not a sad song.
Right.
I know it's not, you know, if without hearing the lyrics, I know it's like a fun party record. So to your point, I don't need to know the lyrics to like get the song, which is, that's crazy. That's dope.
No, it's cool. And I think like that's what really, I think, defines this new wave of like hip hop's top artists, you know, because it's like Playboi Carti, really, like, his whole thing is that like you don't know what the fuck he's saying. Like,
that's his thing.
That's his thing, you know, and people really like that because they can look at something that Playboi Carti does and be like, oh, like, I know I'm in it because it's Playboi Carti. Mm. You know what I mean? And his aesthetic like tops all.
Okay, so we got Playboi Carti as one of hip-hop's new influencers. Next on the list is Lil Uzi Vert. Rihanna, what's your favorite song from Uzi?
Okay, one of my favorite hip-hop songs of the past decade is probably New Paddock.
New Paddock on my wrist, yeah. White diamond in them shits in pink, yeah. Got going to go get a mink, yeah. New finger rings it like a sink, yeah. You a bad bitch, then we can link. Why? Hit the shower, you might stay.
Uzi, as well, is somebody of that caliber, where when people listen to Lil Uzi Vert, I listen because the production's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And he could sing about watches for a whole song. And like, I don't care because I'm like, that sounds dope, you know?
Mm.
But off of Pink Tape, which he put out last year, I really like Suicide Doors.
I will
Balenciaga straight out the showroom. Bitch. I put spikes all in my head just like I'm Goku. Bitch. She looked at me in my eyes, I'd be the old you.
Now I'm aware of Uzi Vert. I feel like he's been out for a while, like late 20 teens.
Because he had EXO Tour Life, and EXO that like popped off.
Push me to the edge. All my friends are dead. Push me to the edge.
You know, his top track on Spotify is his feature on Juice WRLD, Lucid Dreams.
Yes.
Crying, I'm nauseous. I hear that so often. I sometimes get lost in my
head. I genuinely think also that if Juice WRLD did not die, he would be on that Playboi Carti level of influence.
He'd be in the top.
You know, it would be Carti, Uzi, Juice WRLD.
Wow.
Yeah.
Rest in peace. Rest in peace.
I feel the same way about Lil Peep, too, because like Lil Peep's a favorite of mine. And I'm like, his influence would be, I think, a lot more pronounced.
Yeah.
If he had not died at 21.
Okay. This is really cool. I think from what we heard from Playboi Carti, which had more like hardcore punk rage aesthetic.
Yeah.
This is more emo pop punk in its approach.
Right.
And something I'm seeing is that they're addressing mental health and drug usage in a way that just wasn't being addressed in hip-hop in previous generations. It's also extremely sad that we've lost so many artists to drug abuse and depression.
I do think the tide might be shifting a little bit. And I think that's in part due to artists like Future, right? I think of this line that he has on Like That, right? Where he's like, all my hoes do shrooms, all my hoes do coke.
Mm-hmm. All my hoes do shrooms, nigga, all my hoes do coke. 20 karat ring, I put my fingers down the throat.
Which is so different than like what he was doing on like DS2, where he's like, you know, I'm about like lean and all that shit.
Yeah.
Full of the mud, yeah. Nigga, full of them drugs, yeah. Feeling real right, yeah. I'm on the same thing as Mike, yeah.
I've been like looking to Future as like, okay, like what is this man up to in terms of like furthering drug culture and hip hop? And like when he said on like that, he was like, all my hoes do shrooms. I was like, oh, okay, we're pivoting.
Slight shift.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so we've got Uzi, we've got Playboi Carti, and finally, let's go to Tyler, the Creator.
Yeah, bitch, I'm outside with it. Tell them niggas I did it. Allergies to bum niggas. I see you, my eyes itching. This shit regular, regular. All this shit be regular. Ahead of y'all, I'm better, baby. Check the vehicle.
That was Sticky off of Tyler's Chromacopia.
I think something that Tyler does that I think we're going to see in this next generation of hip hop is being the sole creator of your work. Tyler writes, composes, arranges, produces all of his music. And I think that's what makes his music in part so compelling is that it's unequivocally his vision. You know, like it's solely Tyler that is making these tracks, and we hear that, and that's why it sounds so unique. And as we're in this era where everybody can open up BeatStars and download a beat, like everybody can spend a half hour on FL Studio making something so basic and simple. I think
we're just gonna download it on YouTube, type beat.
No, you know exactly, what I mean? Exactly. And I think we're gonna see a lot of hip hop artists lean into this, like, I am the sole architect of my artistry, sensibility, because it's so successful with people like Tyler. And I think part of what Tyler is doing is making music that is so different than anything else out there that it is compelling.
Mm, I love that. And I would love to see that. I think, you know, coming up, when I was making music, I was inspired by the Pharrells and the Kanyes and people that like made the beats and rap. Like that was always attractive to me because I had a feeling I could do both, but it's harder to do.
Yeah. Well, I think like Tyler's experience in part comes from his time in Odd Future, right? The rap group that he started in, because that was a very collaborative environment, you know, and you're working with a lot of artists who have their own careers like Steve Lacy, like Sid, and you're kind of developing a skill set through your interactions with other people. And frankly, I don't really know if that's something that we're going to see for a while, because I think hip hop is very fragmented. you know, where you're not really getting these collectives. I think the last one was Brockhampton, you know, from the 2010s. Like, I think there's this solitary nature of hip hop these days where because everything is online, because you can collaborate with people never even meeting them in person, mm-hmm. I think developing that skill set is a little bit more difficult.
All right, so we got Rihanna's top three
mm-hmm.
people to influence the next generation of hip hop. What are you listening to right now?
So somebody who I really like right now, probably my favorite hip hop artist of the moment, is Tisa Korean. You got to play Let Me Hear You Scream.
One, hit the club. Two, hit your bitch. Three, I get silly. Four, now we rich. Five, got them six. Seven, I'm the shit. Eight, made a way. Now her pussy on my leash. If you got some good pussy, let me hear you scream. If you got some good pussy, let me hear you.
Yeah, that's hard.
Yeah.
I think this is the first beat where somebody just went up the scale. He just went ba 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 and then just started it over.
Yeah.
That's hard.
I like Tisa because it's like, what if the most influential sound in the world was still in 2024 Kanye 808s and Heartbreak or Travis Porter?
If you got some good pussy, if you got some good head on your shoulders, if you got some good pussy, if you never let a hope.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
It's like imagine your own universe and then like proceed.
Right.
So we got Tisa Korean. Anybody else?
Well, I think something interesting that I'm listening to, that I'm hearing percolate, is this kind of style of hip hop that is happening not in America. So, like, I've been listening lately to a lot of hip hop happening in South America. And, you know, Brazilian hip hop right now is having a moment. But I think lately, specifically, I've been listening to this artist, Stiffy, who is based in Argentina. But he is doing something with his friends that he is calling, like, Musica Dos, like Music Two, mm-hmm. you know, it's like so far removed from what we know as current hip hop. Him and his cohort of like Argentinian rappers are doing something so interesting.
Radio Nuclear, Radio Nuclear, hacemos bombas chingonas.
DJ Smokey presents.
This is the exact hip hop that connects with my heart.
Mm.
Like DJ drops and just mm-hmm. like bombs and like
right.
all that is
right.
of the culture, big culture. All right, let's keep playing it. Let's see where Stiffy is going here.
So that's Cough Cough by Stiffy, DJ Smokey, and another artist, August Fortnight, 2008, full name.
Come on, come on. You haven't missed. Like, you could play this back-to-back with the Travis Porter. So it's like something about the turn of hip-hop happening right now takes us back to dancing, social in a group in the real world. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I feel like
there was a period where everything was kind of like cerebral and moody and dark. And I would be happy to see that shift into we're back outside and having fun together.
Right, right. I think that's for two separate reasons. And I think one reason why everything is like party forward is because, you know, we're coming out of COVID, right? People want more communal spaces, especially for hip hop, which I think thrives in a group concert setting. Like, I think that's why we're seeing a lot of music that's very communal,
yes.
you know, like designed to be experienced in a party space. And I also think another element going back to Playboi Carti is that like everything is like vibe forward, you know, like you can't really make a track that's cerebral and introspective.
Lyrically dense.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like you can't do like lyrical, spiritual, miracle shit and have it be aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah,
you know?
That's a hard line to tread. Yeah.
Right. And like even Tyler is lyric forward, I think often, but also has beats that are their own entity where like it kind of offsets his lyrical prowess, you know, because he can write really good lyrics and he can sing and he can do all of that and have his tracks be vocal forward, but also he has beats, you know, and it's like someone like me who listens basically only to production. I could listen to a Tyler track and be like, I don't know what he's talking about. And frankly, I don't care because the beat is so good.
I think to sum it up, this next generation, and it's probably been happening for a while, is moving towards feeling more than anything, you know, like making somebody feel something. And that doesn't necessarily have to be by what you say. Somebody like Tyler's really melody driven and wants to take you different places with his production. And then if you glean something like after like the fourth or fifth listen, then like dope. But like also if you just enjoy the fact that he added some chords after like 40 seconds, then that's dope too.
Right.
So this is all very enlightening. I'm excited for my drive back to Long Beach to slap all these artists. Rihanna, always a pleasure talking to you. You straightened me out today. I was really thinking there was no hope for me. Yeah. And you gave me hope to like refresh my ears and really, really take a second and consider the vibe over everything.
I'm glad I could help. I think like an argument that I hear a lot from old heads, right, is that like all hip hop sucks now and you know, all hip hop sounds the same. And I think that can apply really to like any genre of music. And I think truly the way to combat that is just to listen, you know, and have open ears and like really dig into what artists in the underground are doing.
Thanks, Ree.
Of course.
This is some really cool stuff, like some sounds that are pointing towards things that are unexpected to me. I gotta say one thing though. Where are the ladies at?
Yeah, it really should be mentioned that women in hip hop, since its inception, have been breaking records and setting trends. Even in 2023 and 2024, it's been the ladies who have really dominated.
Yeah, I feel like in some ways Kendrick got us on the wrong path. Like the whole big three thing is sort of like set the framing of this conversation towards the hyper masculine side of hip hop. And yet I feel like we've been doing stories on the way that women have to carve out their own lane. And there's been so many good things happening the last couple of years.
It goes without saying, if you want hip hop to party, melody driven, it's aggressive still, and it's fun.
You're not going to the guys anymore.
Yeah, we're not going to the guys. The guys are kind of emo and slow and weird. The girls, Glorilla, you got Lotto, you got Meg Thee Stallion, you got Dochi, phenomenal mixtape. The list goes on and on. I can go on for days.
I feel like these artists could have disqualified Kendrick's claims from the very beginning, and perhaps is a great invitation to have you back again on mic to present some more of what's happening in your ears real soon.
I would love to.
Thanks for bringing me the story, Brandon. It's been fun.
Thank you, man. Anytime.
Switched On Pop is produced this week by Brandon McFarland, in addition to Rihanna Cruz. Also engineered by Brandon McFarland, edited by Art Chung, illustrations by Iris Gottlieb. We're a member of the Vox Media Podcast Network and a production of Vulture, which is part of New York Magazine. You can subscribe at nymag.com/pod. You can find all of our stuff on social media at Switched On Pop. We'll be back again next Tuesday with another episode. And until then, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks to Huntress for their support. Keeping your data safe is important. However, if you're a small business owner, then protecting the information of yourself, your company, and your workers is vital. In comes Huntress. Huntress is where fully managed cybersecurity meets human expertise. They offer a revolutionary approach to managed security that isn't all about tech. It's about real people providing real defense. When threats arise or issues occur, their team of seasoned cyber experts is ready 24 hours a day, 365 days a year for support. Visit Huntress.com/Vox to start a free trial or learn more.
Here's the truth about AI. AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/AI for people.